Good afternoon and welcome back to Ulcerative Colitis Motherhood and Me. I'm Ulcerative Colitis Mama and I'm joining you, yes, quite unusually in the afternoon rather than in the evening. And it's just basically because I've got a bit of spare time on my hands and it's too warm to do anything else. So, so yes, I thought I would podcast a bit earlier on in the daytime. So, basically, I just wanted to update everybody on the saga of Snag, which has been an ongoing issue for the last couple of years. So I kind of wanted to do an update on that in case you haven't seen my Instagram post lately, and just basically what's going on in my world at the moment. So I'm trying to bring these episodes a bit closer together. I know it's kind of once in a blue moon at the minute, but you know, it's just finding the content really and finding things to talk about, to podcast about, and just basically any sort of sourcing that information really. So without further ado, let's get started with today's episode. I must apologize as well, especially for my last podcast episode where I probably sounded like I was yelling down the microphone. It's basically because I've been updating my home office, used in inverted commas. I've obviously coiled up my headset and the microphone's become very, very close to my mouth. So I do apologize if it sounds like I'm yelling at you. I have tried to sort of move it away. Thankfully, it's on a bit of a wire. So I'm not screaming at you from my from my home office today. So yeah, so Snag then. So for those of you who are new to my podcast, hello, welcome. Please take a seat. Feel comfortable. It's a safe space. And for those of you who are established listeners of my podcast, welcome back and thank you. So yeah, Snag started 2 years ago. So Snag, it was the horrific nickname that I gave my IUD, so my marina coil. So I had that installed, well, whichever word you'd like to prefer, quite soon after little G was born, because obviously with ulcerative colitis, I didn't know how extensive it was going to be, how much it was going to affect me in the long term. And of course, the risk of colitis, as with any other IBD, is your, kind of like your absorbency with your gut. So oral contraceptive wasn't an option at the time because I didn't know how bad or how managed or however you want to call it, my symptoms, my colitis was going to be. And when I was initially diagnosed, it was classed as extensive. So that was pretty much three quarters of the way through my large bowel. But thankfully, touching wood, it is now reduced to basically proctitis, which is just basically the last segment of my large bowel. And thankfully, I've been in remission for 2 years so far. So with a little blip in the middle, but other than that, I'd been very well managed. So I was quite limited on my options of contraception. And so soon after having little G, with everything else that was going on, the last thing I needed was to get pregnant again. And subsequently, I was quite happy and fulfilled and satisfied with just the one child. So I went and got the IUD. Now, had it for 5 years, absolutely no trouble at all, no major symptoms, no issues really. And then it came around to 2 years ago when it was due to be, taken out and replaced, that it wouldn't come out for some reason. So, and it became very painful, very tender, just it was not for leaving, not for budging. So following several to-ing and fro-ing with sexual health services in my local area, all the way to like 60 miles across the other side of the country, pretty much, and having had scans and things, I was then seen by a gynecologist finally in December last year. And she tried to have a go at getting it out, and it was actually horrifically painful, to the point where I began sobbing, which, you know, as with most people, I've got a relatively good pain threshold and I'm not by any means a wimp. And of course, I was going through a lot of stress because I just had a car accident as well a couple of days before that appointment. So anywho, she couldn't figure out why it wasn't budging, but obviously the scans were almost, you know, they were 18 months old by this point. So, well, they were certainly over 12 months old anyway. So not the most reliable source of information, I might add. Anyway, so eventually I've had a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, and it got to the stage where I kind of filed a formal complaint on the account of basically the lack of communication, really. And regardless of, you know, I wasn't classed as an emergency patient, I was classed as a routine, which, yeah, in all every essence of the word, I probably was, by comparison to somebody who's going through a nightmarish diagnosis. So, you know, I was very fortunate in that regard. However, it was still very frustrating. And for some reason, there were not enough gynecologists in my local area for some reason. It's obviously not a very popular job, but well, fair play to them. But anyway, I'd been marked down for, I'd had a hysteroscopy under local anaesthetic, but that was not achievable because basically SNAG had indeed snagged itself, and my IUD had actually migrated so far that it was actually, so if you imagine it like a little T shape, that the arm of it, so one of the top bits, if you like, was actually quite heavily embedded, not only into my uterine wall, but it was actually starting to go into my fallopian tube. So that's not where it's supposed to be. Basically, it migrated quite far away. And things like the threads had come away during the sort of the attempt back in December. So following that, and you know, I was treated with great dignity and, you know, and very compassionately by the staff that looked after me at that appointment in February. But they said, unfortunately, without a general anaesthetic, there's no way they can get it out in a way that would deem me a bit more comfortable. So I then had three cancellations due to, unfortunately, it was industrial action taking place by nursing staff across the UK at the time. There was also the backlog from COVID. These were the sort of the comments I was getting following my cancellations on the first couple of goes. And finally, my third cancellation was because I didn't have an anaesthetist, which is kind of pretty essential when you're having a general anaesthetic. So finally I got given yesterday as a date, and you know, the day before I was kind of on pins waiting for that phone call again to say, oh, I'm really sorry, but your surgery's been cancelled again, I don't know, because there aren't enough unicorns or something, or I don't know, just some other excuse for me to have to psych myself up again and prepare myself again at a later date. However, no, I'd contacted the ward. Yes, they did have a bed for me that morning. So it was a 5 o'clock start yesterday morning, hour and a half drive to that hospital again, which is a good sort of 60 miles away from where I live, with Big G. Thankfully, Big G, because obviously after general, you're not able to drive for 24 hours. Anyway, so I get there, I managed to dash up to the ward in time to get there for 7:30 to be admitted. And I was second on the list, on the morning list. So quite nervous by this point. They've got all my theatre pack ready on my table by my bed, so which is your hospital gown, incredibly sexy, and a pair of netty knickers. Now, if any of you have either been an inpatient or you are a healthcare professional, you'll know what I mean by netty knickers. And they're not nice. They're not nice at all. If you imagine a string vest, well, these are string pants. And yeah, they're awful. So like fishnet pants, basically. So yeah, so it was quite a quick turnover, really. So I got there. There was a lady next to me, bless her, she introduced herself to fellow patients, and it turned out she was going to be ahead of me on the surgical list, and she was having a much more complex surgery than I was. So we both got sort of what we call clerked in, so we were seen by our respective consultants and nurses and everybody else. So I got to meet my team quite early on. Now, the elusive consultant that I was supposed to be under decided to make an appearance, and she, you know, it was almost like I felt like saying, oh, finally, doctor, we meet. But I think she was only there in a supervisory capacity, because the surgeon that actually operated on me was a young guy called Emmanuel, and he was amazing. He was such a nice guy, very well spoken, and as you would imagine, being a surgeon. And yep, so he basically went through everything, you know, the risks and things like that. So they were quite confident it was going to be straightforward, which I hoped. Then I met a lovely anaesthetist called Matt, who I feel like I've worked with at some point in my own hospital. And I couldn't place it, you know, when you're just adamant, you know, that person's face. And I thought, I know you from somewhere. Anyway, I basically, being an overthinker, being a nurse anyway, which makes you an overthinker about anything health related. Unfortunately, it's the curse of being a nurse, as they say. You know, he said, look, is anything bothering you about any aspect of the surgery? And I said, yeah, I've only had a GA once, and that was like when I was 7, and that was like a tooth extraction, and it was probably not a true kind of GA. It was probably like just heavily sedated. You know, so he'd went through everything with me, and he sort of said, look, this is a very safe method. He said, I'll be monitoring you the whole time. He said, these are the drugs I'm going to use. This is what, you know, I tend to do, and you'll have sort of like no awareness, and I'll give you, you know, pain relief while you're under, and blah, blah, blah. And he just put me really at ease. And so big shout out to anaesthetist Matt. Thank you very much. So it was a bit later than expected that I went down to theatre, because obviously the lady before me was having quite a complex surgery, bless her. She was having quite a big surgery. And it was boiling hot yesterday. It was probably at 28 degrees. And the hospital where I was, they have these really, they've got like sash windows, but they only open probably about 4 or 5 inches. And when it's a massive room like that with 6 beds in, there is just no airflow at all. And I wish I'd taken a book with me or something, because the phone signal was absolutely awful. The hospital Wi-Fi was absolutely non-existent. So I couldn't like get hold of anyone. I couldn't like, you know, use any of my apps or anything, just to keep me kind of entertained and the anxiety at bay. And I was absolutely shattered. I was thirsty. I was nailed by mouth. So I was starving as well. Anyway, so I rock up at theatre at about 12:30, 12:45 eventually. And I've been in since 7 that morning. So I walked down to theatre, which felt like the walk of shame. And I had this hospital gown on, which I was convinced was gaping at the back. So I took my dressing gown with me, and a pillow. They say, you know, you've got to pack your own pillow. So I was like, right, okay, fair enough. As in, it's one that's off the ward, but I had to walk down with it. And I walked down there with a lovely healthcare assistant called Caddy. And she was absolutely gorgeous. She was so nice and just chatted the way down, because I find talking helps with my anxiety. Just talking about anything, distraction, just talking about anything really, small talk, I'm down with it, it's fine. So I rock up at theatre, and I met a really nice operating department practitioner called Ricky, and he cannulated me. Now, cannulation is never fun. It's always painful and not very pleasant. But I've never known anybody to make me laugh while I've had it done. So I've only been cannulated like 4 or 5 times in my entire life. And like 3 of those times was when I was in labor. So I really didn't care. The time after that was when I had my colonoscopy. I really didn't care then either. But I was just very hyper aware of everything yesterday. And yeah, he was talking to me about things like paddleboarding, because, you know, Big G had gone out paddleboarding for the day, you know, while we were up near the coast. So yeah, that was it. And then Matt, my lovely anaesthetist, talked me through. So he said, look, this is, I'm just going to give you some fentanyl now. So he said, you're going to feel like you've spent the morning in the pub. I was like, I wish I'd had. You know, and they hooked me up to like the, you know, the monitoring and stuff. And my observations and things. And within about a minute, and he got me to do some deep breathing. And I don't know whether that was just to help calm me down or if that was to help enhance, obviously, the drug to circulate around my body quicker. And probably a bit of both, to be honest. And obviously to put some oxygen on me as well. And I did. I felt that almost like that buzziness in your brain when you're drunk. It was like that kind of feeling. And he said, right, okay, I'm putting the propofol on now, which is the anesthetic drug, which looks like milk. It's not very pleasant to look at. So I could feel him putting that in. And he sort of said, oh, you know, just take some nice deep breaths now. Just imagine you're somewhere other than this place. Just relax. Just, you know, just take it in. Nice deep breaths in and out. And that was it. I'd obviously gone out quite quick because he said you can count back from 10 if you want. And I just remember saying 10. I don't remember saying anything else. So I'm obviously very not sensitive to anesthetic, but I'm obviously very responsive to it. So then obviously they had the surgery, and I kind of remember waking up, but my eyes kind of didn't line up for a few seconds. And Matt was at the end of my bed in recovery, and he just sort of said, everything went okay. Kind of glad you're okay. So I was happy with that. Well, at least I think it was him anyway. You know, it's a little bit of a blur. And then I had a lovely recovery nurse called Katerina, and she sort of hooked me up with some IV paracetamol because I had quite a lot of cramping after the surgery. And then she went on a break. So I had another recovery nurse called Jane, who was amazing. She was just so funny, just had proper banter. You know, you can have like real banter with some people. And she was like, look, do you want to see your pictures? And I was like, yeah, go on then. So obviously with hysteroscopy, they can take still images. And I couldn't really, to be honest, my eyes didn't line up for a good half an hour after my surgery, to be fair. But yeah, they basically proved that it was well and truly wedged. So then anyway, I got taken back up to the ward quite soon after. I don't think I was in recovery that long, though they said I was probably there about 20 minutes before I woke up. So obviously you lose complete track of time, space, because it was like 20 to 2, I think. I remember looking at the clock because there was a clock on the wall in front of me. Anyway, they whipped me up to back to the ward, and got my areas checked and everything, you know, and my blood pressure, and I had some fluids going as well, thank God, because I was parched. And I had my first cup of tea, and that was amazing. It was absolutely amazing when you've been fasting for that long to have a cup of tea. It was like, it's how very British of me. Anyway, and it was great. And, you know, managed to get sort of dressed quite quickly afterwards. Had to sort of kind of flag somebody down to help disconnect my fluids and my IV line. And they were quite happy with me. And of course, I had a bit of sort of bleeding afterwards, which was quite normal because of what they've been up to. And Dr. Emmanuel came to see me, and he said, you know, he was very happy with the outcome of the surgery, and he said there was absolutely no way that we could have done that without a GA because of how far embedded it was. So he was very glad for that, and thankfully they didn't put another one in, even though they did take one down to theatre with them. And I was like, nope. I said to Ricky, the ODP, I said, if you see them coming anywhere near me with that, just smack it out of their hands, okay? And he was like, yep, sure thing. They must have thought it was completely insane. But like I said, when I'm nervous, I talk more and I talk a lot of crap when I'm nervous. So, so that was that. So snag is no more. Snag is non-existent now. So that's one less concern now. So the only other thing now is I've got to go back onto oral contraceptives. So my GP thankfully did hook me up with some a few weeks ago, which I've sort of kept behind ready to start when I got a theatre date. So then it's just like that, remembering to take it. And the thing is, I have to take my mesalazine daily, so I'm hoping I can kind of synchronize them so that I remember to take my pill at the same time. So I'm just so, so grateful that's now over and done with, that, you know, that's a big part of the big sort of crisis, if you like, that's boxed off now and, to, you know, can be sort of locked away and sort of written off now. And I, as minor as it is in by comparison to a lot of other things, just sort of that waiting and not knowing, and that, and it, you know, and it did start, that this whole saga started 2 years ago, pretty much sort of July 2021, which is where it all began. And now we're in September 2023 and I've only just had it removed. So that's how much of an impact it's had on my life, and the not knowing, and the scare of, you know, perhaps rendering myself infertile, rendering myself into early menopause, all these sort of factors sort of came into play with it. And that was something I was really, really quite concerned about at the time, especially a few weeks ago when I reported on here that I was suffering with horrific brain fog, which, touch wood, thankfully has kind of cleared. I do sometimes have a little bit of struggles with word retrieval at times, but I think that's just down to being tired and being stressed and working in the NHS, to be honest. And plus the fact I'm, you know, due to start my new job very soon, well, hoping so. That was a whole other saga as well. So I had to drive 40 miles a couple of weeks ago to hand in loads and loads of documentation to prove who I was, that I'd be married, you know, just basically all that stuff. Because in the UK, we have to have what's called a DBS, an enhanced DBS, which is Disclosure and Barring Service, which basically is a police check, a background check. So if you work in the public sector in particular, you're working with vulnerable groups like adults, children, and, you know, the public, you have to have these background checks to make sure you're not a complete psychotic, scary, evil person. And it just basically discloses any convictions, cautions, or any criminal activity that you've been involved in. Which is flagged up on like the police national computer, and like, you know, basically any sort of criminal background gets flagged up, and that can determine whether you are suitable for the role you've applied for. Now, the last time I had one done was 6 years ago, so they can, because I was moving internally, I could have one. If I had had one within the 3 years, it would have been fine, but obviously I would have had to move to my married name. But in this instance, it's been 6 years, so my current one wouldn't be enough to carry over to my new role anyway. So and the hoops you have to jump through to apply for a DBS certificate are very, very hard, especially when you're married, and especially when basically you don't own enough you know, utility bills or headed letters, you know, like official government letters that contain your name and proof of address. And it was almost like I felt like I was having to fight to prove that I was who I was. Now, I've hyphenated my surname, so it would hopefully kind of correspond that, oh, she was this, but now she's this and this. So anyway, I had the go-ahead last week that the counter-signatory had been done, and that had been sent off to the Disclosure and Barring Service, which is like a government agency. And now I've just got to wait now, and it takes up to about 10 working days for that to process, because they have to go, they kind of put you into a search and look you up, and any kind of violation, any kind of caution, criminal conviction, anything shady about your past is brought to light. But hopefully in my case it won't be, because I'm a very good person. And you know, so that's quite a lengthy process. So my ID check's gone through, so that's fine, even though I already work for the same service, but you know, never mind. It's just all jumping through hoops and red tape and whatever. At the end of the day, I work in, I'm a public facing role. I'm, you know, I'm working with vulnerable people. So it's good if it filters out the wheat from the chaff, as we say in the UK. And it has to be done. And with, you know, obviously with current affairs and things in the UK, it's not surprising, really. And it's good, you know, because I've got nothing to worry about. So it just takes a long time. And I'm so ready to start my new job now. You know, and it's almost like that I'm getting ready to leave. I'm kind of tying up my loose ends now. So I'm really, really ready to start this new role, to the point where I'm buying books and reading up and doing sort of continuing professional development on things that will help me with this new specialist role that I'm going into. So being a bit of a nerd about it, really, but I kind of want to go all in and hit the ground running, as they say. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. I'm just dreading my uniform fitting, because I know I'm like twice the size I ever used to be when I worked in the hospital previously. And my new role, I'm not going to be wearing the traditional kind of nurse's uniform that I have been accustomed to in the community. I'll be going back to like the hospital scrubs type uniforms, so which involve elasticated waistline, and basically that everything's just square because it's unisex. But I'm a bit dubious really on how the fit's going to go, because like I said, I put an enormous amount of weight, and having been weighed prior to my operation yesterday, I've put an insane amount of weight on. So now that's going to require a bit of a, you know, montage / lifestyle change to try and nip that in the bud, really. Yeah, that was a little bit of a shock, really. I knew I'd put weight back on, but in comparison to my lockdown personal training sessions where I had like a full, you know, overhaul, if you like, where I went on to a really, really strict regime, I was actually 2 stone lighter then, which is like what, something ridiculous, like 12 kilos or something, 10, 12 kilos. Something ridiculous like that. So I really want to kind of get back to that, and particularly we've got our first sort of foreign holiday next year with little G, and you know, you kind of want to get prepared. And the thing is, preparation, I don't want to be sort of freaking out ready, you know, sort of a couple of weeks before we leave to go abroad. I want to start it now. You know, I'm in my mid-30s now. I'm classed as overweight for my height. My BMI is something ridiculous. I'm kind of fitter than I was, but I'm not. That's going to be another, you know, let's hit the 80s montage music and, you know, get a headband on and let's start kind of getting back into shape. So in addition to that, I'm trying to work on my fitness as well. So I started a class a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't able to go this week due to Big G's shifts, but it's called Warriors, and it's basically they're this similar things. If you look on social media, similar sort of vibes, where it's a high intensity. Well, they didn't mention the high intensity, but I've discovered that for myself. Workout, which is kind of a cross between like a boxer size type thing and mixed martial arts, which was a bit of a culture shock, I'm not going to lie. But I burnt like 500 calories in like 35 minutes. It was insane. And I was probably one of the youngest people there, and I was probably the closest one to having a cardiac arrest. Because it's constantly on the balls of your feet. And I don't have a good base anyway. On the account I've got like little feet and a lot of body. Well, I do at the moment anyway. And it was brilliant because it was like doing your jabs, your hooks, your undercuts, elbows, high knee strikes, to really fast club music. Now, kind of your Wigan Pier kind of dance music. So like hardcore, like really fast 16 beat type music. So it was great, but my God, I was sweating. And it wasn't half as warm as it is, like it has been this last week. So I'm going to try and see if I can go again. I'm going to try and get my ass back down at the gym again. I'm going to start walking again. It's just this heat wave is putting everybody off. because it's just things like I can't walk the dog because it's just been too hot for her. And I don't want to be one of those people that gets kind of slated for walking your dog in hot weather. Plus the fact I love her to bits and I don't want her to burn her feet or get heat stroke or anything like that. You know, I absolutely love my dog to pieces. So that won't be happening. So I'm hoping once the weather breaks, I can start getting back into the swing of things. And I'm off this week now anyway. So, you know, so I'm hoping for all that. I'm kind of hoping for like a complete kind of, come on, let's do this kind of epiphany, really. I get them now and again. It's just sustaining it, really. It's the mental side of it. And that's where I struggle, because I get to the point where I think, who on earth can tell me that I can't eat that? Who can tell me that I can't have a rest day? You know, but then it becomes like rest day after rest day after rest day after rest day. And then it becomes, you know, eating crap day to eating crap day to eating crap day. And it's just, it's just falling back into those really bad habits that I don't want. And, you know, and things like it affects your sleep, stress levels, your cortisol levels, you know, your libido, things like that. So, you know, it has to stop. You know, I'm pushing, you know, I'm coming up, you know, I've only got a couple of years left till I'm 40 and I want to be around as long as possible. And I've really got to put the work in. Plus the fact I want to be able to wear a bikini next year. And everybody, I am very much in the agreement, everybody has a bikini body. But I just, for myself, want to feel more comfortable in that. I'm very, very self-conscious as it is. So, you know, I'm willing to put the work in without paying anybody. I did get a quote from a friend of Big G's, who's kind of like a nutritional consultant slash, he's not so much a personal trainer anymore, but he's kind of like does like the whole lifestyle things. He doesn't restrict your diet. Basically, he would be the ideal kind of person, the go-to person, like perfect. But he charges £200 a month and I can't afford that. I really, really can't afford that. Not on my pathetic NHS wages. So I'm just trying to borrow ideas. I'm going, when I'm on my social media, you know, when I'm kind of like flicking through, scrolling through my social media, I'm looking for healthy recipes. I'm looking for high protein kind of snacks and things, advice, you know, gym advice, things like that. So hopefully I've got the tools. I just need to use them. And hopefully I'll start making some changes to my lifestyle, which I keep saying every year and it never happens. But, you know, I am determined this time, because, you know, I don't want to end up with any further health problems in the additions to the ones I've already got. So there we are. Plus the fact my knees are starting to hurt now, which means I'm probably carrying a bit too much weight on my old pins. So I need to lose a bit of weight. I do beg your pardon. Somebody's revving a really loud vehicle somewhere. Oh, it's my friend who lives a couple of doors down. I do apologise. He's a bit of a petrol head, as you can tell. So I will talk slightly louder over the sound of his engine. So, yeah, fitness, eating healthy, lifestyle changes, it's all going to have to happen. So my fridge is now full of everything green, thankfully, and nothing beige. So we'll see how often I put it up. To be fair, I love food. I love all food. And that's probably why I'm in the state I'm in already. But things like, I just need to be more sensible with my choices. And which is what I'm planning to do. So aside from that, I'm also going to get my first tattoo in 8 years. On Wednesday. So I'm really looking forward to that. Though it's been 8 years since I had a last tattoo and I can't remember how much it hurts. Apologies, I have to keep stopping and starting. It's because little G keeps coming up the stairs for things and I'm hoping it's just to use the bathroom and not sort of, you know, invade my privacy and my podcast recording. So no, it's fine. So yes, I'm getting I haven't had a tattoo for 8 years. So that's going to be interesting. So I'm getting a sort of a large piece on my right leg, basically because I've not got really any small tattoos left. They've all kind of developed into bigger ones, and I've already got like a small one on my ankle, which is like a very small tribute piece. But it kind of, by comparison, there's like no kind of symmetry, and I'm a bit I'm not one for symmetry very often, but I've kind of got a big tattoo at one leg and then this little tiny farty little thing on my other leg. So I'm just going to try and mirror them up a little bit so they kind of balance out. And I wanted my wedding flowers. So I had, I can't remember the name of them, like blue thistly things. I will try and find out for you. If anybody out there is a florist or, you know, any kind of, you know, plant specialist, they're like blue thistly type flowers. I think they begin with an A or an E. Can't remember. We'll find out. And I had black Baccara roses, or Baccara, however you pronounce it, which are the deepest, darkest red you can get in the rose family. And so I'm having those and just sort of having it cascading up my leg. So I shall hopefully include some photos on my Insta once it's done, and if it's done to my liking. And we shall see, because it's going to be a whole day session, which the last time I had that done was when I had my left sleeve done. So we shall see. And that was way before little G came along. That was a good sort of 6 months before little G came. Yeah, I think it was. I think it was 2015 when I had my my sleeve done. So yeah, that's quite a long time ago. So yes, so I'm looking forward to that. So I better take some snacks with me, healthy snacks, I might add. Because I remember that much, at the very least. And plus, like, one of my work besties has just had her first two tattoos done. And there's almost like I get a bit of a tattoo envy. And I was like, oh, I really want another one, but I didn't know what to have. And I thought, what's better than, you know, immortalizing my wedding flowers? And yeah, so that's what I'm going to go for. So we shall see. And the artist I'm going with is a new, like, I've never worked with her before. So she's based quite locally and she specializes in watercolor, so we shall see. And that's kind of like my favorite kind of tattoo style on myself. So yeah, really looking forward to it. So there's a lot going on my week off. Hopefully I will try and do another Warriors class again, and if I do, I will put a picture up on my Insta just to show you what kind of profound effect it has on my face, if nothing else, because I did take one and I just felt so red. And because it had been quite warm as well, and the studio where I do it, they have like these like really big industrial fans on the wall, but they do nothing. They do nothing at all. And like I said, I was one of the youngest. Like, most of the women there were like old enough to be my mum, and they were rocking it and they were amazing. And yeah, the instructor was like, you know, teeny tiny, super flexible, jumps about 6 foot in the air. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen. But I actually kept up with the routine, which I was quite impressed with, considering I've got two left feet. So yeah, not too bad. So yeah, I'll keep you guys updated. As always, you know, please be safe, keep talking. Mental health is such a big, big thing as well. I always advocate for it. And just let you know, my podcast story is a safe space, and I hope you're all okay, and I will speak to you again soon, and hopefully not a big gap between my episodes. Okay, so all in all, take care and speak to you soon.